Today we're going to stay in the progression of exploring the paramis, as we've been doing for, well, a couple months. And today it's the parami, as you might guess, of metta, of loving kindness. And I want to read a little bit from Christina Feldman's Boundless Heart. She writes so beautifully about the foundation of metta, how foundational it is, let me put it that way. If I can't find it quickly, I won't worry about it. Well, let me sit, put it this way. Yes, I found it. There's an indispensable, the quality of metta has an indispensable foundation of an awakened heart. Metta is an attitudinal commitment that is brought to all moments of our experience. And metta really is the cultivation again of loving kindness, of the sense of friendliness towards ourselves, towards all beings, is really the ground upon which we lay the stones for our path of awakening. Yeah. That it is this place of orienting towards a sense of kindness to ourselves and to others, as a sense of befriending. It's also a verb, she writes. It's an all-inclusive befriending of fearless kindness rooted in mindfulness and insight. Metta is a verb, befriending. We learn to befriend ourselves, all the people who come into our lives, the difficult and the lovely. We learn to befriend all events, all circumstances, again, the challenging and the lovely. And there's no lack of opportunities to practice with us. Yeah. And this notion, I've said many times before, that we are always practicing something. And can we, when we catch ourselves, have the awareness to lean into the possibility of practicing the sense of kindness? I have read this book, Ajahn Sucitto's, The Paramis, Ways to Cross Life's Floods. It's an ebook available online. We can get it through Abhayagiri Monastery as a hard copy. What I love about his teachings on mindfulness is he, I'm sorry, on metta, is he offers it as metta is non-aversion. And I love this. I remember when I first read it, I was like, oh, a nice way of kind of lowering the bar. There's a teachings in the sutta that the Buddha talks about how if a bandit were to come and chop off your arms and chop off your legs, you should still maintain this quality of loving kindness and metta. And I always found that sort of pressing, like, oh, it was such a high bar. I don't know that if my arms were being sawed off, that I would maintain a sense of loving kindness towards the person sawing off my limbs. I did not find that inspiring at all. But this notion of metta as non-aversion, I can totally get behind that as usefulness of, oh, right. And so being able to watch when there's just an aversion to small things, kind of the mundaneness of when the body's a little bit uncomfortable or things don't go exactly how we want them to on the menial level, there's that kind of aversion. And there's aversion to when more dramatic events in our personal lives and then what's happening out in the world. And this gentling the mind, which is a phrase of his, gentling the mind into this place of, okay. Can I still have a sense of friendliness, even in the face of that which I don't like, that I don't prefer? And it doesn't have to be one or the other, right? With the practicing of the Vednas, the feeling tones of there's pleasant, then there's unpleasant, and there's neutral experience. That's our first kind of contact. And we don't have to fight that. Like, okay, so there might be unpleasantness, when we lean it into aversion, it becomes much bigger, and then the mind can get kind of caught in the trap of aversion of like, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like some part of myself. And it's such a doorway for the mind to kind of spin out. And when the mind can spin out in that ill will or fear-based thinking, no good ever comes from that. And this notion of, oh, wait, what if we gentle the mind into this place of non-aversion, of releasing that grip to be like, okay, can I settle in a place of releasing, noticing the aversion? So in some ways bowing to like, okay, this is here, but releasing the grip it has, and that this is an experience of metta, that we may aspire to befriend all things and befriend all moments. Beautiful. and a sort of an easy entree in is this abiding in non-aversion, and it can be such a useful way of working with ourselves when we're really caught in out in the world, and oh, there's just so much that's happening that we can have these intense negative feelings born out of fear or just not liking how things are going. Okay, so can we settle the mind into this place of non-aversion? In this book, I have read so many times, and I feel like each time I read it, I come across something new and delightful. And I wanted to share just another little piece that caught my attention today. And he writes about this the sense of othering, our sense of ourselves and the sense of others. And there can be such a, there is such a, we're living in a time that seems to heighten, in some spheres, the sense of otherness, the when we're really caught in the fear thinking. This is took a neurobiology class with Dan Siegel, and he talks about this also, sort of when we are scared, our me versus you, us versus them thinking really amplifies. So when there's a lot of fear, there's a natural amplification of like who are my people and then who is not. So there's a neurological process at work. So this extra effort that's needed to kind of tame that fear to be able to stay in this place of connection. So in the earlier arriving sit, that like, can we practice having a felt sense of connection to ourselves, to the world around us, to kind of balance out what can be a an impulsive commitment to us and othering. But he writes about this. So when we're in a place of aversion, there's me and then there's someone else. There's an othering. Yeah, I don't like this. He writes, you can't have an experience of self without another, whether it's animate or inanimate, that is to contrast to it. However, for each mind, the emphasis on the self, me and mine bit, is a crucial aspect of the world of changing others. Even in your own mind, there appears the self as a watcher and the other, the object, as thoughts and emotions, where the self is how you conceive yourself as being, and the other is what you should be, might be, or were. And for some reason, when I read this, I was like, oh my God, that's so true. That the way we can other ourselves in some way, I shouldn't be this way, or I'm so stupid, or I'm doing something wrong. And that this duality out in the world of me versus you, us versus them, watching how we can do it to ourselves when that critical voice that tells us that we've messed up, there's something wrong with me, is this form of a duality within ourselves. And this beautiful invitation of let's heal that. Let's soften or at least recognize the voice that can come in to criticize ourselves or that we should be something else or my life shouldn't have gone the way it did. Or if I had only not made that mistake 10 years ago, I wouldn't be where I am now. All the ways we can beat ourselves up. Yeah. And whether it's subtly or not, to soften into that of just seeing it like, oh, this is this voice that comes in as somehow a duality with myself. Like I'm othering some part of myself. I'm putting some part of myself in exile of a mistake I made or a perceived mistake I made. And again, it's all perception, right? I don't know if what I'm about to say is factually true because I haven't ever been able to find the evidence to support it. But even if it's metaphorically true, I love it. The notion that back in the day when we had the space shuttle launching to the International Space Station, it was off course 95% of the time. So we're constantly course correcting. We have an experience. We bump up against it. We maneuver around it. But the way so many of us were raised and the thinking of our culture can be like, if you don't get it right, you've messed up. You've made a mistake. You didn't try hard enough, or you've done something wrong. And one of my, this, I have so much gratitude for these teachings to soften that, like, no, sweetie, you didn't necessarily do anything wrong at all. This is the conditions of being human. There's suffering in this realm. It's unavoidable. You can think you can do everything right. You will still suffer. Okay. Yeah, knowing that is a given, it's all about how we respond to the circumstances that we don't like, the individuals we don't like, the things that happen in our events, the constant change and the impermanence of the people that we love dearly. We will lose them, right? Through the changing nature of our relationships. And to be able to cultivate the sense of loving kindness, of metta, of generosity, of friendliness, it allows us to relate differently to what happens. It is all in the sort of how we relate. I think Dan Siegel talks about this, and many trauma experts do share this notion that it's not just so much of the what happens to us, but it's more how we respond, how those around us respond to us. We can, if we're met, if we're attuned to, either internally or to what, if those who are caretakers of us, those that in our world are attuned to us, the impact of a trauma, whether it's capital T trauma or small T trauma, can be much less. It's mitigated by the response, particularly within ourselves. When we're older, it's how do we respond to the events in the world? Do we move into a place, the tangle of fear thinking, to borrow from Rumi, or can we cultivate, as we did in the sit, this ability to feel infused with a sense of loving kindness or ease in the body? We're much more able to be responsive to the circumstances that come our way. Inevitably, some will be amazing and wonderful, and some will be just terrible, right? We know this. This I also love, the sense of dissatisfaction that occurs in the territory of alienation is not attributed to the disconnection between self and other. And many of us, these are ice can be isolating times. Yeah, the sense of disconnection that we think we're still recovering from the lockdown and all that was lost in terms of our ability to connect and have community, and the sense of alienation that can rise, our sense of disconnection or loneliness. So it's not attributed to the disconnection between self and other. Instead, ignorance tells us there's something wrong, either with ourself or with another. And again, this was sort of one of those lightning bolts when I read that, like, oh, it's all born out of ignorance. And I mean that in the Buddhist sense of the deluded thinking. The mind is not seeing clearly. It's wrong view. And this notion that when we have, again, that sense of there's an internal critic, something's wrong, I did something stupid, I shouldn't have done that, my life should look otherwise, da 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 da. That is a thought born out of ignorance. The tragedies that are happening, be it in Lewis and Maine or what's happening in the Middle East or really anywhere that we can point to where there's so much suffering, it is born out of an ignorance and this deluded thinking of the difference between self and other. And I just find this so liberating because it's an easy catch. So when I can find myself, if that self-critical voice kicks in, or that voice once, it can kind of be born out of fear base, sort of othering. Oh, that's just, it's wrong view. And being able to catch it, even just in a moment, there can, as I've been playing with this, there can be a very liberatory aspect of, oh, there's nothing, it's nothing other than wrong view. And then being able to come back to the next step being, can I feel that cloak of loving kindness around me? Can I drop back into a sense of friendliness towards myself, towards all beings? And again, that could be a high bar. So we come back to feeling a sense of connection with something that's easy to love, you know, the animals or the sleeping children or the beauty of a sunset. Yeah. So where do we find the places where the heart can open and soften? Okay, hang out there. Oh yeah, that's what this feels like. And allowing the embodied sense of metta, of loving kindness, of friendliness to be known. So here's, I'll just share his piece about the non-aversion. Metta is non-aversion, but it's also non-fascination and non-projection. It releases others from being the objects of our projection, lust, and idealism. It allows others to not be the way I want them to be for me. It's liberatory for others because we're allowing that sense of, oh, you get to be who you are. And I can appreciate that you are actually different from me. So it's honoring the sense of difference. True love for another means that you don't appropriate someone or project your unfulfilled wishes or needs onto them. Instead, metta means recognizing otherness and feeling that that's okay. Yeah. And just being able, again, to abide in this sense of okayness with ourselves first. It's very hard to have a sense of okayness with the world when we have some version of a war within ourselves. And this is nothing new. We've heard this a million times, but being able to really catch where that where the internal battlegrounds are when we get caught, or when that critical voice can step onto the center stage and tell us how we've messed up, or things aren't going well, or things we shouldn't have done. Like, oh, okay. Softening into that and realizing that's born out of wrong view, and coming back to a sense of appreciating that which is lovely. So I want to share a couple poems. I'll start with from Hafez. Now is the time to know. Now is the time to know that all you do is sacred. Now, why not consider a lasting truce with yourself and God? Now is the time to understand that all your ideas of right and wrong were just child's training wheels to be laid aside when you can finally live with veracity and love. Now is the time for the world to know that every thought and action is sacred. Now is the time for you to compute the impossibility that there is anything but grace. Now is a season to know that everything you do is sacred. To follow on that sentiment, this is from Karen Mazin Miller, who turns this into that, sound into noise, aroma into odor, taste into pleasure or disgust? Who turns yes into no, grace into unkindness? Who turns the present into the past? Who turns the now into not now? As it is into as it should be. Silence into boredom, stillness into restlessness, the ordinary into the menial. Who turns pain into suffering, change into loss, grief into woe, woe into the story of your life? Who turns stuff into sentiment, desire into craving, acceptance into aversion, peace into war, us into them? Who turns life into labor, time into toil, enough into not enough? Who turns why into why not? Who turns delusion into enlightenment? Who thinks? Who feels? Who senses? Who turns? All practice is the practice of making a turn in a different direction. Oh, that just makes me cry. Because that's exactly it, right? It's in this moment, can we catch what direction am I turning in? Am I turning into a direction of into ordinary into menial, pain into suffering, change into loss, delusion into enlightenment, pain into pleasure? And again, wanting to emphasize the accessibility of this. It's in this moment, it's possible. It's possible to catch. Oh, wait, is this, as I was sharing last week, is this thought, is this intention, is this action leading me into stress or into a sense of ease? Is what I'm thinking, what I'm doing with my body, actions, thoughts, words, deeds, for my benefit, for the benefit of others? And that can feel like it's sort of global in the questioning or long reaching, and it's not. It's just this moment. What we have is this moment. And we can, with awareness, with practice, with cultivating our sense of being able to catch ourselves in the moment, there's freedom to choose which direction to turn. I'm going to read one more poem and then we'll do an exercise. Where's to start? This is The Word by Tony Hoagland. Down near the bottom of a crossed out list of things you have to do today between green thread and broccoli, you find that you have penciled sunlight. Resting on the page, the word is beautiful. It touches you as if you had a friend. and sunlight were a present he had sent from someplace distant as this morning to cheer you up and to remind you that among your duties, pleasure is a thing that also needs accomplishing. Do you remember that time in light are kinds of love? And love is no less practical than a coffee grinder or a safe spare tire. Tomorrow, you may be utterly without a clue, but today you get a telegram from the heart in exile. Excuse me, proclaiming that the kingdom still exists, the king and queen alive, still speaking to their children, to anyone among them who can find the time to sit out in the sun and listen. So I invite you to close your eyes and to imagine yourself outside somewhere beautiful, maybe outside your front door, on the porch of your grandmother, a place in the wilderness that you love by a stream in the woods in a park. And then imagine yourself sitting in that patch of sunlight. Listening to the sounds, perhaps of birds or crickets or gentle breeze, the sound of your own breath, the sound of your heart beating, the sound perhaps of kids laughing, the sound of a cat purring in your lap. What are the sounds that delight the heart? And imagine this spot in the sun is filled with such sounds. Knowing that this place in the sun is safe. And allowing just the breath to be easy. And in this spot in the sun, where hopefully there's a sense of ease in the body, to recall in the last couple of days, perhaps the last week, any random acts of kindness that came your way. Someone opening the door, someone offering a smile. The sunlight touching your face, the scent of a rose meeting your nose. Again, a beautiful sound meeting the ear, a beautiful something beautiful that you tasted. These are all offerings of kindness. Can we, in this moment, orient the mind to consider all these acts of kindnesses that we've received, again, the last couple of days, the last week, a text from a friend, something that made you laugh. A book you read, a poem you heard, a song you loved. That these acts of kindness may or may not be from a human form, but more born from how the perspective we have if we start looking for these offerings of kindness, these offerings of generosity. What comes? And then to consider how you yourself, any offerings of kindness, again, a smiling hello to someone, the holding of the door, the phone call, the text you might have sent, the feeding of another. The receiving the gifts, that too is an act of kindness, of generosity, of friendliness. And as we sit here together in our respective pools of sunlight, to allow there to be an embodied sense of being in this flow of generosity, this flow of loving kindness, of befriending. That in our own selves, we are free from any harm within ourselves. That we are, there's ease in the body, there's peace, a sense of gentleness, an abiding in the generosity of goodwill. Feeling our sense of connection to each other, to ourselves, to the incredible beauty of the world around us. And again, recalling being on the receiving end of these acts of kindness, of generosity, and then our own offerings of kindness. And again, not looking for any grand gestures, but it's just orienting to how can I see, how can I most readily see and be available to the kindnesses around me? The sunlight, the soft texture of something, the taste of something delicious, the smile, the sound of laughter and music, a relative health of our bodies, the people in our lives that we love and who love us. Again, a giving and a receiving. It's an availability to the beauty and friendliness of the world with all its complexities and the flow of the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. It's all here. And the path of liberation is all in how we respond to what comes towards us. So, thank you for your kind attention. I'm going to stop here.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.